podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Again, they've only got three forwards in the lineout, and it's been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Do you know what? It's the fifth anniversary of the Attacking Scrum this week, Dan. Did you know that?
I did. I had a little LinkedIn notification on saying, well done on your anniversary. It felt a little bit wrong.
What's embarrassing about that, mate, is you put it straight on your LinkedIn the very,
of course I did.
The very day it happened.
Yeah, I know. 5 years, though.
I know. Blimey. That's a lot of time us chatting rubbish about rugby, isn't it? Sat in the freezing cold basement to doing late night ones in the kitchen to this futuristic version. Well, futuristic. It would have seemed futuristic if you'd have said to us 5 years ago that we could record from separate locations and still be able to see each other and talk and get it all done in half decent audio quality. So yeah, there you go, mate. Amazing. Five years.
It's come a long way. Or has it?
Nothing. I'm not sure it has.
Not a lot's changed, but yeah, 5 years. It is quite incredible, really, that 5 years has passed.
Which is, yeah, it's just as well that our two favourite players came off the bench this weekend, and you got to see Lloyd Williams in action and I got to see Matthew Morgan in action. So there you go, mate. It's good that those things have remained a constant.
Absolutely. Long may it continue as well.
Long may it continue. But the big headlines of the weekend, a resurgent, flamboyant number 10 continues to make headlines after a long layoff. That's Gareth Anscombe, by the way, not you, Dan, just in case you're wondering then.
It's getting geared up then.
You're getting geared up. Well, mate, I mean, you're performing the Gareth Anscombe role right now. We used to call you Henson because you had to manage your workload. Right now, you can't get enough, can you? Just back from absence, he wants to play every week. Get the ball in hand.
Absolutely, ball in hand, controlling the game nicely. Can go up a few levels still, but just holding a little back. Still getting man of the match performances, Jen, week in, week out. That's what I bring.
I can't wait to see what you're taking it up a level is, Dan. Cannot wait to see what that is.
Tempo,
this is it. But you've even been doing your homework as well and watching rugby, which is, I was astonished. We had the text through this morning to see who's available for selection. And we've got to manage Yestin's workload, especially after the Lions, because it damn near nearly killed him having to watch that rugby over the summer. And we've let Murph have a night off after a long shift from January through to now. So, to see a text from you coming through and saying, oh, yeah, seen the rugby, raring to go. So, yeah, breath of fresh air, mate, like a brand new signing.
That's it. Yeah, no, I needed to change it up, didn't I, from watching no rugby over the last 5 years to watching something now. So,
yeah,
well, they've got a good job.
At points over those 5 years, you've watched no rugby. I would say for the vast majority of it, you did a pretty good job of working 6 days a week and juggling a young family and still managing time to watch Cardiff.
Oh, keep going
with
on this. Keep going. I'm loving this. Vic, come and listen to this now. What Jed's saying. Yeah, it's lovely. Oh, no one's around because no one wants to talk to me in my house.
Oh, mate. Oh, mate.
I know. House full of girls, though.
It's, I know.
Yeah. It can be a very lonely place at times, Jed.
Yeah, no, I know that. But I'm in a similar boat. In fact, I watched the Ospreys Cardiff game this morning while I was getting my little inner milk. So that was on, which might explain why I'm down the pecking order when it comes to who she wants to spend time with. Because I consistently make her watch Welsh rugby. But There we go, mate. Maybe that's
yeah,
it.
Maybe that's where we're going wrong, isn't it? They're like, we don't want to watch the regions or the clubs or whatever else it's called.
It might well be that, mate. That might well be the problem. Well, fortunately, we have. And where do you want to begin? Should we begin on Friday night with the Scarlets?
Yeah. Seems like a good place to start.
Yeah, you enjoy that one?
Yeah, I did enjoy that game. Yeah, I thought there was... it was pretty physical, wasn't it? Pretty physical affair, and some good performances from the Scarlets boys. I'm quite exciting actually to see where Scarlets are gonna sort of go with this style of play they're coming out with, because it's an exciting brand at the moment, isn't it? But it's not quite clicking all over the park just yet. But you feel that it's going to, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think we mentioned last week that some of the ball in hand was really exciting against Edinburgh, and I think that continued this week too. You know, I'm sure we'll get onto your favourite part of naming the players who caught your eye fairly shortly, but certainly it looked good in attack. I thought they were good in the tight as well. Actually, it was a good foundation to build on. You know, the pack went well. And, you know, they've obviously still got some injuries and some players to come in, particularly in the back row as well. So I think encouraging signs for Scarlets. And, you know, like we said, I think it was their defence against Edinburgh that cost them that game. And that, you know, started to gel a bit more. I didn't think the Lions had a huge amount up their sleeve, really. It looked, you know, apart from a couple of individuals who really shone for them. And, you know, Hendricks outside half, and the outside centre had a fantastic game as well. You know, really eye-catching stuff. But they never really managed to string that many phases together, which I think, again, is testament to the Scarlets' defence. Also, you remember we mentioned last week that they've got a new defence coach on board who's come over from Ulster. Well, they also interviewed him on Friday night. He made a brief cameo, and his name is Hugh Hogan. Which, again, sticking with the nickname themes, has to be Hulk, surely.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, gotta
be. Were you a big fan, going off topic a bit, were you a big fan of WWF back in the day?
No time for it, mate. Not interested. Really? No, just never, like, again, lots of my mates did and stuff, but I never really got it. You into that?
Yeah, it was huge, yeah. Like Jake the Snake and, yeah, all the Legion of Doom. Yeah, it was really into that, but it's such a bizarre thing. But yeah, back to the game. I exactly what you said, really, with the Lions. I thought they brought quite a big sort of power game, didn't they? But they were disappointing that they couldn't keep real phase play going. And when it mattered, they tended to knock on the ball or spill the ball or do something a little bit silly, really, which I think if they'd held onto the ball and gone through the phases, they could have caused a bit more trouble, because they took time to get over the line, didn't they? But there was a couple of examples, you know, that one try in the second half where they just kept grinding it out and they managed to get there. But yeah, it was pretty sort of easy stuff, really, to defend, wasn't it? It was just you had to make your tackles, basically.
Yeah, I think that was it. And yeah, Scarlets did a pretty decent job of that. I have to say, I didn't enjoy it as much as the games last week. I think it was pretty obvious the Scarlets were going to win that throughout. I, you know, regardless of what the scoreline was saying, I didn't really feel like it was going to go down to the wire. I thought they were the better side across the 80 minutes quite comfortably. But let's get on to it, mate. Who caught your eye for the Scarlets, or indeed for the Lions? Who stood out for you?
Yeah, for me, Costello, I thought, was had a great game. I thought he physically hit hard in the tackle, and we all know what he can do in attack. But he brought it, didn't he? Took it. I mean, a lot of people say it, doesn't he? But he takes it to the line, takes it flat, not afraid to take a knock, take a hit, and just creates a fair bit of space for those outside him. And when you've got that, yeah, that back line, plus with further players to come in, that's where I get excited by the Scarlets, because you think it's only going to get better. And the two centres as well are just quality, aren't they? Just absolute class. You know, Scott Williams just looks like a different level.
I thought in the first half in particular, he was very impressive. You know, it was just lots of nice touches. And you kind of seen throughout Scott's career, you know, he had a real good turn of pace at the start of his career and, you know, a good eye for a gap. And then he became very much a power centre. And I think, again, obviously with the, you know, perhaps some of the injury problems he's had prior to the back problems, you know, maybe he'd, you know, he'd lost that yard of pace and, you know, we'd seen him turn very much into a power centre. But, you know, some of the sleight of hand stuff and the passes around the back and the footballing skills, you know, with with boot and with hand, I thought was really impressive. And, you know, I know I said last week, I think he's got a long way to go to kind of get back to the kind of form that get him in the Wales side. But, I mean, Pivac will certainly be taking a look. It was the first half, I would say, the first 40 minutes for sure was another really encouraging performance for Scott.
Yeah, it is. It's when he's got the ball in hand, isn't it? It's not the... We know he can carry hard, but it's... I said it last week that he looked as if he had so much more time on the ball than the other players. And it was prevalent again, wasn't it? Lots of double pumps, lots of holds, lots of really sort of nice, simple lines as well that just made it easy for, I think, you know, Costello, really, didn't it? It was nice for him and then nice for his centre partnership, who he knows relatively well. So, it's a real joy to see Scott Williams. I know we're both massive fans, aren't we? But I think most probably Welsh rugby fans are as well. How can you not be? So, yeah, really good. And are we, can I move on to the pack?
You can. Well, actually, you can in one moment. But I was really impressed with Tom Rogers. I know, and not just the try scoring prowess, but just looked really, really lively. I know he's been highly rated for a while, and fans down west have been raving about him, but he's a real prospect, I think. There's just a fantastic turn of foot and a real bit of flair about him that I think is powerful. Really exciting. He is powerful, isn't he?
Hard to put down.
Touch of the Josh Adams is, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, he's difficult. He broke a lot of tackles, didn't he? And he is, yeah, he's really quick with his feet and a proper threat, isn't he? So it's a good shout.
Yeah, I was very impressed with him. But go on, let's have a look at the pack.
Yeah, with the pack, I've got to make a massive sort of shout out really for Callum Afoni. I thought he was superb, absolutely superb, isn't he? Because the scrum was under quite a lot of pressure at times as well, and the way in which he was able to just sort of set things up. Well, not actually, that's a bit disservice, really, not set things up, but actually carry hard and then get a platform again for the Scarlets just made a massive difference. You think if that was an eight that a lot of eights could have struggled and in that sort of game, but he was superb, wasn't he? And you know, carried hard, hit hard, and did all the things you'd expect from a top quality eight.
Yeah, do you know what? Now you're talking about it, and I said about 5 minutes ago that there was a good platform. You're right, the scrum really did struggle. I've completely misremembered that. You're right, the scrum struggled a lot during the game. And yeah, it was he was doing a lot of picking the ball up from under the hooker's feet and gaining those, making sure that the Lions didn't turn those scrums into penalties. And, you know, I said it before that, you know, the kind of stuff that Toby does really well for Wales and when he was at the Dragons before that was getting you out of trouble and buying you 5 yards when you really need it. I thought, yeah, Callum Afoni did a lot of that work and quite rightly picked up man of the match.
Yeah, he was superb. Some nice nifty offloads as well, and his contribution was felt all over the park, really, in the tight and in the loose. So probably head and shoulders above all other players in the pack, I would say, really. But anyone else catch your eye in the pack, Jed, or sort of a little bit of blending in with?
Yeah, I mean, I think Rob Evans was busy. Which is kind of what you want to see, but yeah, you're quite right. Scrum time was very, very difficult. Not that all lies with the front row, but yeah, I think Callum Afoni without doubt the standout player in that pack. And yeah, what a fantastic signing he's been for them. It's you know, the just such a dependable player and gets you front football when you need it. So yeah, he's definitely a deserved man of the match for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Hands down.
Quick kind of aside before we go on and look at some of the other games. This will probably cross over into it, but naturally, with the autumn games getting underway in a few weeks, we're going to have an eye on Wales selection. The centres is one thing I want to talk about again. Obviously, you mentioned there Scott Williams and John Fox. And have you got any clear idea as to who you would like to see feature in the centre for Wales during the autumn?
I haven't really, no. I mean, I know that it's going to be... There's a good number of options now in the centre, aren't they? And what I am excited by is it doesn't seem like that long ago that we were having almost those, you know, crisis pod meetings, really, with what are we going to do in the centre? We're so thin on the ground, aren't we? And it's not all of a sudden, because this has been building for some time, isn't it? But we've got quite a lot of depth there now, haven't we? Whether or not it's, you know, the depth is sort of international quality is another thing, but there's some decent centres around. And I think the biggest thing, Jed, really is how the combinations work, isn't it? That's going to be vital in the centres, but also tying that into the, you know, the outside backs and the number 10 as well.
It is. And I was thinking about this because particularly during the Ospreys-Cardiff game, which we're going to talk about in more detail in a minute. But I was kind of thinking you could very easily see a back line featuring Anscombe, Halaholo, Collins in there, which just made me think, you know, as much as those are the form players, is that going to scare New Zealand? Because they're players that, you know, that New Zealand let go, you know, had no interest really of capping any time in the last 7 or 8 years. It's about where they are now as players and how they perform as a combination. But it did just make me think, you know, is that the kind of backline that's going to strike a bit of fear into New Zealand, or do you think they'll kind of be fairly unthreatened by it? And not that I'm saying that is the backline. It was just something that popped into my head that, you know, and you could chuck McNicol into the mix as well. And, you know, realistically, you've got a backline that features a lot of players that New Zealand just simply didn't fancy. But then again, their strength in depth is very, very different to anyone else in the world.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't think the New Zealanders would sort of think, you know, well, they couldn't make it for us. So, you know, we got an advantage. I just think they look at everyone like they can beat them, can't they? And you know, if they're the players that we think that are on form and can do the job, then we'll go with it, won't we? But you've almost got backlines in. You know, you've got the Scarlets. You know, the Scarlets 10, 12, 13. Haven't you? You've got the Ospreys 10, 12, 13. You could see it's going to be. I think it all comes down to the how they all go together, doesn't it? That's going to be, and who's playing 10 as well?
Well, I think 10 is the obvious one. I mean, Toby Booth after the game was saying that, you know, Anscombe needs a bit of time to find his feet before being thrust straight back into Wales. But the fact of that first game being played outside the international window means he's hands down going to be Anscombe playing then.
Do you think that's Toby Booth though saying, give him a bit more time?
I think he's just trying to take the pressure off his player, really. You know, I think obviously Anscombe has been out for such a long period of time, has concentrated on getting back to fitness, has given a really good account of himself in the first two games. And then I think it's just his head coach trying to take a bit of the pressure off. I'm sure.
But, or could it be, could it be sort of, you know, could it be sensible? Like, I know he's mentioned it last week that he's back playing for the Ospreys, so he's got to be fit. But it is different match fit, isn't it? And could it be more sensible for Anscombe? I know we've got problems, but does it matter? You know, does it matter really? Is it better to have him? You know, do you think it's better to have him rested? Just get him, you know, quite a good number of games with the Ospreys before suddenly he's back in the international scene.
I don't think there's any options at all. You know, I just think that like we went through last week, if you've got Dan Bigger unavailable for selection, don't know what Jared's fitness is going to be like. I mean, would you select Priestland to play in that game at age 35, or would you pick Anscombe, you know, the basis that he's fit and playing, therefore he's available for selection? Because I'd definitely be going with Anscombe.
Well, I just think, you know, we got Priestin's there. We know Priestin can do a job. You know, Costello, we Sam Davis. There is players that are there. Would I like to see Anscombe there? Absolutely. He's the best 10. But I just wonder whether for him it would be better not for him to play. And I can't see it happening either. But
I'm sure he'll be desperate to play, because by then as well, he might well have another three or four games for the Ospreys under his belt. Three games anyway for the Ospreys under his belt. The bench or starting. And I think as long as he feels fit and confident enough, then, you know, particularly that game, you know, the nation of his birth as well. When the opportunity's there, because realistically, if you don't pick him and then you pick, I don't know, Priestland or whoever for that first game, Bigger will come in for the second game, and then Anscombe is down the pecking order. I think he'll be desperate to play and desperate to really prove a point and say, up until I got injured, I was the first choice 10. And, you know, I'm back now and I'm fighting for this jersey.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I'm sure they'll have a chat with him, won't they, and say, how is he feeling? And a lot of it's good. It's got to come from that, isn't it? If he's feeling good, feeling fit, then and mentally right, then he'll be in there. But it was just something I wanted to ask you, really, because we got the Six Nations, you know, coming around the corner. They're the autumn internationals, of course, they're important, but there's potentially bigger, bigger games beyond this. So, yeah. Let's time will tell.
I mean, I think the thing is that you've got the big three this autumn, and presuming that South Africa fixture still goes ahead, there's been some rumblings in the press today about them suffering from bubble fatigue and stuff like that. But my guess is that game will go ahead, and you end up playing you'll end up playing the big three and Fiji. So there's no easy game. You know, there's no Canada on a Friday night here. They're all very, very tough fixtures. So I think that, you know, with that in mind, you've got to put together the strongest side that you can find. And I think Pivac will want to do that. You know, it seems strange, because even though there's a Six Nations title in the, you know, in his trophy cabinet, I still think there's a lot of questions. Just, you know, obviously a bit different over the summer because of all the Lions being away, but, you know, that Six Nations title, it was strange. You know, a couple of games against against sides without, with players getting sent off, a couple of interesting refereeing decisions, and played in empty stadiums. So I think that, you know, for momentum, he'll want to go out there and show that side can do it against the best sides in the world. So I don't think there's going to be that much experimenting, personally.
Yep. Yeah, no. Let's see them. See what happens.
All right, we've still got to talk about the Ospreys and Cardiff game, and we're also going to have a look at the Dragons Leinster game too. But first, we're going to take this very, very quick break. Time, Dan, to talk about the Welsh Derby this weekend, which was the Ospreys against Cardiff, a win for the Ospreys, and I guess a bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Quite a functional performance from the Ospreys, I would say, clinical, professional, but, you know, it kind of didn't, perhaps not want to set the pulses racing, you know, and then Cardiff kind of fed off scraps a little bit, but had their moments. What did you make of that game as a whole?
Yeah, I didn't think it was a great game, great spectacle, really. It was it was watchable and quite entertaining because it was close and it was a derby, you know. But if you put a neutral in front of it, they would have said that was a poor quality game, really, wasn't it? But I sort of hung on in there and watched it. Cardiff made so many errors, didn't they? So many penalties go against them. It was very difficult for them to get any sort of momentum, and they struggled a bit physically as well in the areas that we've probably mentioned for the last 5 years consistently. Ospreys, yeah, look, Anscombe was quality, wasn't he? Just quietly went about his business, I'd say, really. in, you know, neat, nice, tidy, organized fashion, as you, you know, some of those bits you pointed out. And, you know, there was, you know, there was some decent, you know, decent performances in the, you know, in the pack. I thought, seven, you know, Jack Morgan. Jack Morgan was good, was very, very good. I watched him quite a bit throughout the game, and yeah, at times I found myself thinking, well, you know, he's making tackles, he's doing what you think a seven should do, but he was doing stuff on top of that as well, I thought, that just made him stand out for me, actually, which I'm not sure would have been picked up if you hadn't been watching him all the time.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, actually. I was kind of thinking the same thing after two games, because he's, you know, I've said it before, he's one of the most exciting prospects in Welsh rugby. And in the first game and the game against Cardiff, I found myself having those exact same thoughts, saying, yeah, it's neat and tidy, he's getting through a lot of work. And then there's a couple of eye-catching turnovers in there that you think, right, this guy really, really does know what he's doing. And part of you actually thinks that sometimes it's not just about those turnovers, it's knowing when to go for them, and sometimes just, you know, just slowing the ball down briefly and then getting out of there is the right thing to do. And when you have that opportunity to make a big turnover, then pulling the trigger and doing it. And he's I thought he was impressive, and he can't be far away from the squad, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, he's going to be pretty close, isn't he? I also thought he put in, there was one particular hit in the second half where he really hit one of the Blues boys hard, or Cardiff boys hard, and dislodged the ball, and it was a knock on, completely changed the momentum at quite a key point. So he's got that physicality, that edge to him as well, where he'll know when to hit someone really hard as well.
While we're talking about hard hits from number sevens, the one Ellis Jenkins landed on Gareth Anscombe was absolutely massive and perfectly timed. And, you know, yeah, it was just exactly the kind of thing. Is it me, or does Ellis look a bit bigger to you? I don't know. It seems like he's really bulked up a load.
Yeah, he does. I thought that as well. Yeah, his legs sort of, they almost look like, you know, you've got a bit of a distinction between your thighs and your lower leg. His looks to be sort of almost the same all the way down at the moment, which is interesting. But yeah, he looked powerful, didn't he?
Yeah, he looked, did. How do you think he's got on in his first, you know, his kind of first couple of games back?
Yeah, I think he's done some decent stuff. I think he's had quite a lot of penalties go against him though as well, hasn't he? I can't say I've looked at those closely enough to say whether they're, you know, whether they were 50-50 or whether he got them wrong or you know, whatever. There's always a bit of interpretation, isn't there? But he has had quite a few penalties against him. I think it's probably, I don't know, is it fair to say it's not quite, he's not at his best then, you know?
I think it's been solid. I certainly don't think there's been anything wrong with it. I think it's just, I feel like he's one eye-catching performance away from getting back to his best. I think as much as anything, it's just getting through those games without injury. I think you're right that there were a couple of those decisions that perhaps he didn't get right, and I would expect that again to come back with more game time, because it is one of the games that he's so good at. He's so strong over the ball, and normally, again, having that ruck intelligence of knowing when to slow it, when to go for the turnover, when to just steer clear is something that he's very, very good at. And yeah, I just think he's getting back up to match fitness. So I think he's been solid in both games from my point of view. I'm just starting to kind of mull over those back row options when it comes to the autumn and you know, having a lot of players come back from injury. It's going to be interesting that first game again, because there's, you know, obviously there won't be any Toby in that game. And thinking, right, who's going to be the best option at eight, and that is an interesting one. So yeah, you know, what kind of balance you look for in that back row? Could you feature, you know, the the Ellis Jenkins, Jack Morgan style twin fetchers into the mix. It's going to be fascinating, that back row, as it always is. But I think particularly for that first game, it's not going to be a straightforward selection.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It is going to be really interesting to see what happens in the back row, as it is, as it is in the centres. That's, there's quite a few.
It's wide open, actually, isn't it? There's loads of positions that you're just not sure.
Yeah, the nine. There's a lot of positions that are wide open, aren't they? So it makes for it's gonna be some big calls coming up, aren't they? And that's where these games are, in the run up now, are going to be pretty important. I thought Collins before he hobbled off, he's a really, it's kind of, there's no point even saying it, is it? But he's an intelligent operator, isn't he? You know exactly what he's gonna do. And I think before he hobbled off, he was definitely gonna be in the squad, wasn't he? Starting, probably, if not starting somewhere, really. I don't know how severe his injury is, but it didn't look too good, did it?
No, it didn't. I'm not sure at this stage, but it's, you're never too sure about that, don't you? I suppose the good thing is he wasn't going off on a stretcher, managed to kind of hobble off. So you hope that it's perhaps not as serious as it might have been. But he's had a really bright start, and like you say, brings that kind of Kiwi intelligence to the midfield, and knowing when to go, when to take someone on, when to put boot to ball, just great game management, which, I imagine is a real nice thing for Anscombe to have outside him, to have, I know he's wearing 13, but just having anyone in the centre who will do that, help take that bit of pressure off and offer another footballing option is really, really handy. And obviously he's slotted in a little bit at 15 as well. So he's, if he is fit for the autumn, I think he'll be there or thereabouts. What about Cardiff then? Like we said, it was a good win at home last week, in strange circumstances with people playing out of position. But I think they'll be disappointed all in all with this performance. Like you say, it seemed to be the penalties just killed them.
There was way too many penalties that Cardiff conceded again. I'd have to be honest, I'd have to go back and go over the game to say whether or not they were, 50-50s or slightly unfair or whatever else. But again, you just can't make that many penalties, can you? I think, front five, they struggled a bit, didn't they?
Well, it was an interesting selection. I know it was mentioned in commentary, but going for Rhys Carey and Dylan Lewis as your props against a very strong front five that the Ospreys had out, and it didn't seem to do him any favours at scrum time.
No, it didn't. I mean, there was some nice touches around the park from Carey and Dylan, but you've got to do what you're there to do, haven't you, in the front row and first and foremost. And I just think it's so difficult if you haven't got the out and out hard edge scrummaging lines of you that come with some of the other props and second row. I thought Seb Davis, he does look bigger. I think Murph mentioned, doesn't he? He looks like he's bulked up. He did carry quite well, but there's still, for me, the Ospreys second row, were better than them, to be honest. And it just, Cardiff, in a strange way, they misfired for me in the pack and the backs. It didn't work. It didn't work in the backs them either. They made quite a few errors, whether it was the wrong running lines or a knock on or sort of running into each other's paths a little bit. It was just quite clunky from them. Yet they were in the game. So I think it would be one of those games, like you said there, that they'll probably look back at and think if they'd actually played, just that little bit better, it could have been a different outcome, really.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was like you say, there was lots of errors, not just the penalties. There, you know, all across the park, really. But still, to be in it that late in the game, and I think actually that was the thing that for me. I know a lot of people. Yeah, and you were saying there, you know, as it wasn't the highest standard of rugby. I didn't mind it as a game, to be honest, because again, it went down to the wire, and either side could have won it. And I just think that. That's what this league needs more than anything is competition, and the more close games that we can get, the better. But it will definitely be frustrating for them because they were in the game, and it just seemed like there were errors hitting them at crucial points, and that's what made it difficult for them. Whereas the Ospreys, again, to me it looked a bit more like the Ospreys of. And when I say of old, I'm talking going back 5-6 years, you know, or probably even longer. You know, it was the kind of stuff they got it right up front. Scrum looked good, you know, and being able to bring Adam Beard off the bench, even when their second rows had gone very well, being able to bring him on and just add that, not just the bulk, but he seems like he's really developed. And I noticed this on the Lions tour as well. He's got a few more like sleight of hand stuff as well now that I think you wouldn't have associated with him right at the start of his career. So I think he's going to be a really important player for them going forward. But yeah.
Do you see him talking as well? See him talking a lot to there's Josh Thomas and just saying, you know, just cool, you know. And then he seemed to be winding up the Cardiff boys a little bit, and then giving some taps to the front row as well. It seemed like we were almost looking at the captain, you know.
I mean, that second row berth is his now, isn't it? It's if everyone's fit, it's him and Alan Wynne-Jones all the way. And he's really developing into a top quality second row. And the stuff that we know he's done really well, particularly defending line outs and just offering his massive, massive frame at line outs as well. You know, he's always done that stuff really well, but I feel like his all round game is getting better and better. So, he did well. But all in all, you know, again, I think the Ospreys were able to bring on some good reinforcements. I was interested, like you said, there with Josh Thomas. It's interesting that in a game as tight as that, you know, they're bringing on a guy who's not massively experienced, but they seem to be completely, you know, both the halfbacks are pretty young guys, but they seem pretty comfortable that we're going to send them on and they're going to be able to close the game out for us. And it kind of panned out that way.
Yeah, it's nice to see, isn't it, really? You know, the youngsters coming on big, you know, sort of big 10 minutes. And and then come in, yeah, Adam Beard just having a little chat with him and just probably saying, you know, it looks like they're really playing for each other. I could see that they knew, it looked as if, didn't it, to me, Jed, that they knew what they needed to do to win. And that even though it was pretty close, they weren't going to let it, they weren't going to not get the win, if that makes sense. They were, you know, hit hard. You know, across the park. They look like they're going to be tough to beat at home, don't they?
Yeah, I think they are. I think all the foundations are kind of are there now. They've just got to keep the form going. I think Toby Booth's doing a really, really good job in charge of them. And like we said, I thought the recruitment was good over the summer. Having Anscombe back is like having a brand new signing. And they're kind of starting to move in the right direction. Tougher challenges await, but I think they're generally a good nick. And I also think, you know, Cardiff have been a little bit hot and cold, but I think that, you know, they've undoubtedly got a quality coach, and I think that the weird thing is, Dan, like you said, it's just they seem to still have the weakness in the areas that we've always spoken about. You know, I think across the squad they're at least a hooker light. I think in the second row they really could use a massive 6'10" South African bruiser. You know, they just a real enforcer in that pack. It's those positions where they've not necessarily recruited as hard as they could have. I know they've lost Corey Hill over the summer, which makes a massive which makes a massive dent in the squad. But it is kind of the same old problems. But I don't know. I think if anyone can get a tune out of that squad, it'll be Dai Young. And like I say, it was only a four point game. They could have won it. And I think that I think there'll be better performances around the corner from them.
Yeah, agreed.
Want to talk about the Dragons then?
Yeah, so I'm hoping you can. No, I haven't seen this, and I haven't even looked at the score either. So I'm hoping you can.
Do you want me to go through it blow by blow? I'll go through it as a minute by minute account for you.
It's going to be an hour from here now.
Yeah, no, it's where to begin, really? I mean, look, losing to 7-6 loss to Leinster at home. I mean, I didn't envisage that at the start of the game.
7-6.
7-6, yeah.
Wow.
And yeah, we're down to 13 men in the first half as well with two sin bins. They scored their try really early on as well. So that was the first points they scored. Dragons didn't look like scoring a try throughout the bulk of the game, really. Tricky conditions, because even though it had stopped raining, there was a lot of moisture on the pitch and it was greasy. And the way the Dragons have liked to play in recent times is, you know, they'll have Moriarty or Rowlands coming in on angle, or Dixon or someone like that coming in on an angle. There were a lot of balls spilt like that. So we didn't really look like scoring a try, but some of the defence at times was absolutely heroic. There were some big turnovers in there. Maybe I'm just being a bit one-eyed about this, but I did feel like we didn't get the rub of the green refereeing wise. And I think to beat Leinster you need Leinster to have a bad game and you need a little bit of luck to go your way as well. But that said, going into the last minute, could have won it. And Rodri Williams made a massive impact off the bench. I thought he had a really good game. But then, you know, we kicked the ball away right in the latter stages. So we were reliant on trying to turn over Leinster and then score. And Rodri Williams kicked the ball away towards the end of the game, which I think was a bad move, because it's, you know, where you're in that position where you need to score a try, or you need to score points in order to win the game. I just think you're dicing with death if you kick the ball away against Leinster, and so it proved. But I mean, look, before the game, like I say, I would have taken a bit in your hand off for a losing bonus point against Leinster. It's just the frustrating thing is, I think the last two times we've played them at Rodney Parade, I might be wrong because there might be a Rainbow Cup game in there that I've forgotten about, but there's certainly been two occasions at Rodney Parade in the last season where we could have won the game going into the end. And on one occasion, we kicked the ball dead. And this time round, we weren't able to close it out. But I just think, God, if you could have got over the line in one of those games, it would have made such a massive difference to the sense of belief in the camp. But all in all, more positives than negatives. To take that Leinster side was strong. You know, Lions or no Lions, you've still got Ryan in that side. You've got Reece Ruddock. You've got Gibson Park. You got Ringrose in there, Deegan, Andrew Porter, Healy coming off the bench, Baird coming off the bench. You know, it's wall-to-wall quality. So yeah, to take them that close is definitely very encouraging, but it's just frustrating to be no wins from two out of two home games.
Yeah, sounds like a really, really good performance. But yeah, it is slightly frustrating, isn't it? Because Leinster must be one of those, they must struggle a little bit coming to Newport and playing against the Dragons. And it would have been, how good would that have been to have got a win there?
Yeah.
Just massive.
I do feel like it's just, it's really, really difficult because the financial constraints that they're under are well documented. I think the progress that Dean Ryan has made is really, really good, but now you kind of want to make that kick on from being competitive to get in some of those wins. And you know, what a win that would have been against Leinster. So, yeah, look, like I say, all in all, I think the one thing that we haven't mentioned, which I think is a massive, massive positive, is the fitness that the Dragons showed was absolutely huge. And that is one thing that, you know, you can... It's almost a bit like your fielding in cricket, you know, sometimes when you watch like the World Cup and they have the Cricket World Cup and they have, you know, sides like Ireland and Canada and teams like that turn up, and they often say that the fielding is one area that you can work on and work on and work on and work on in training and get better and better. Well, I kind of think fitness is similar in club rugby, and the Dragons have worked really, really hard at that over the summer. And that's evident. You know, they look a lot fitter than they've ever been. So, you know, that in itself, you know, when Leinster are able to bring the kind of quality they can off the bench and you're still going toe to toe with them right at the end, then I think that's a massive thumbs up to Dean Ryan and to Dan Boer and the fitness staff. So yeah, it is encouraging. It's just also a little bit frustrating that I just think a win this early in the season against either the Ospreys or Leinster would have been a massive shot in the arm.
Yeah, it's just because it was so close, isn't it? But
yeah,
when you look at their squad, it is, you know, it's bordering on unfair. It is unfair, isn't it? But they're just absolutely phenomenal players, left, right, and centre. Those that can't make it, those that are injured, those that are on the park, everywhere you look. I suppose it's a very, very well earned point there, isn't it? It's a winning point.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, the losing bonus point, I think, will look a lot better after the defeat has sunk in. So it is a good result when you look back at the season. You're not going to look at losing to Leinster by a point and saying that's a bad result. So, you know, it's hopefully something there to build on over the next few weeks. Because yeah, there's certainly a fair few things in that that I think you can take as big positives. Defence and fitness being the main ones. I just think, yeah, at times, like, you know, it was a mixed bag from Sam Davis. There was a couple of errors in there, but also there were some kicks where, you know, he's picking the ball up in his own 22 and making some serious yards and just taking that pressure valve off. So it's a tricky one. You just need those, we said it before, but those experienced players, your Roger Williamses and your Sam Davies to really make a difference for you. So yeah, it's disappointing, Dan, but hopefully better results to come.
Who was stand out for the Dragons?
Good question. That I would say, do you know what? Even though he got a yellow card, I think Josh Lewis is a really underrated player at fullback. You know, it's funny because you know you think of him as a 10 generally and naturally a good kicking option, but he does look to break when he can and he plays what's in front of him. I think that Rowlands has started the season very well. Moriarty's, you know,
Moriarty looks lively.
He put in another solid shift, and Wainwright, I thought, had a much better game today. He made a really good break off the back of the scrum when we were down to 13, and you do feel more and more like 8 might be his position. You know, just adding that athleticism and the good ball handling that he's got into the mix as well. So yeah, there were players who looked good for me. So yeah, it's
sure. I mean, without seeing it, Jed, presumably the Dragons pack then must have fared up very well, did they? Because I mean, that's a serious Leinster pack.
Yeah, they did, and I think again, like we said, you know. Recruitment has been hard for the Dragons, but both the props they've bought in, I think, have been really good additions, and you know, good props on the cheap, which I presume they are to be playing for the Dragons, are very, very hard to come by. So they did a good job. Carter and Rowlands together in the second row look really good for me. And then obviously you've got international quality in Moriarty and Davis and Ollie Griffiths in the back row as well.
How did Griffiths go?
Yeah, mate, usual, you know, loads of wanting to get his hand on the ball and carry, loads of work at the breakdown, loads of getting smashed around. You know, the archetypal Ollie Griffiths performance, you know, just full of energy and, you know, you just pray
he's going
to stay fit. Yeah,
which is good.
Yeah, you just pray he's going to be able to stay fit for a long period of time. But then you've got Basham coming off the bench as well, who, you know, adds a load more athleticism. So, you know, back even in the depths of the Dragons' worst runs, back row has always been an area that there's been a good degree of strength in, and it's definitely the case at the moment. But yeah, do you want to take a look at next week's fixtures? See what see what you're thinking for that. So we start next Friday. The Ospreys are in action at home to the Sharks. That'll be an interesting one, I think. But they are at home. What are your thoughts on that one?
I can't. Yeah, the Ospreys just look quite comfortable at home, don't they? So I'm going to go with another Ospreys win there.
Yeah, I think so. I think that could be a really good test. Sharks lost this weekend to Glasgow. It's tough. It's going to be tough away from home for those South African sides, I think, because it's a
their
big
format,
adjustment.
Yeah, the what they have to go through is quite tricky,
yeah.
Isn't it? The bubble,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a massive ask for them. So I think Ospreys make it 3-3 next weekend. I think that, you know, like we said, even if they start making a few changes, they've got a strong squad. So I can see that being another home win. Right, what have we got on the Saturday? We have got Dragons away at Connacht. Why does my gut tell me it's going to be howling it down? It's going to be like gale force winds in Galway, and this is going to be this is going to be a bit of a dour affair.
And Guinness will be served.
Oh yeah, damn right.
I fancy a draw. I'm going to go with the Dragons win there. I'm going to back your boys there, Jess.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
An away win.
Yeah, I mean, God, that'd be nice. I tell you what, mate, there's been something that's been few and far between in the 5 years we've been doing this podcast. Away Dragons wins. It's a half decent opportunity for them, isn't it? Undoubtedly, it's a tough place to go, though, isn't it? And I think that Connacht will be buoyed by a win on Friday night against the Bulls. It's a very, very tough. I would say losing bonus point for the Dragons would be my prediction there. So Connacht to win, but Dragons to take a losing bonus point out of it.
Yeah, it's probably a lot more sensible.
While we're talking to the Bulls, they travel to Cardiff on Saturday night, that one. Home win there, Dan?
Yeah, home win for Cardiff. It's going to be a much needed win, that as well, isn't it? Yeah, just got to get back to bases, isn't it? Less pens, sort the set piece out, and hopefully the backs can fire, because they didn't go as well as everyone knows they can do on the weekend, did they?
No, I think they didn't have a lot of ball, I didn't think, during that game, and you're right, what ball they did have, I think, was there's glimpses in there, but there was nothing too consistent. I think there'll be a much better performance from Cardiff this weekend, and I think they'll beat the Bulls in that one. And then you look at it as two home wins and a losing bonus point away at the Ospreys. And again, on paper, that doesn't look like a bad start to the season at all, does it?
No, it doesn't at all. And it was spirited. You know, there was some big hits. You know, and from the Ospreys as well, they hit hard as well, didn't they? Physicality, I thought, was there at times. But it's just being sharper, being wiser, I think, as well, which I'm sure Dai Young will be looking at.
And then Sunday, the Sunday afternoon game is Scarlets at home to Munster. This is the game of the weekend featuring the Welsh regions for me. I think this is a big opportunity to see where the Scarlets are at three games in. Tough game. Can they get a win in that one?
Yeah. That should be a really good game. I do think the Scarlets can get a win there. I think they're going to have to be stronger up front. I think they're going to have to really tighten up there in the set piece. And it'd be interesting then to see how the backs can fare up and link in with the pack. We haven't seen the complete performance yet, have we, from the Scarlets? They're sort of building some quite nice stuff but there's still quite a bit of error, you know, error play in there as well. So I do think they can do it, but it is not going to be easy, is it?
No, it's not. I think you're right. Yeah, they put away the Lions on Friday night, and you're quite right. The set piece will be a worry, particularly when you're playing against Munster. The fact that they're at home, I think, will be a big boost. The back stuff really is potentially very exciting, but the set piece will have to go, you know, particularly the scrum will have to go a lot better than it did this weekend in order to stay in that game. I think it'll be tight. I think this could be a good game, but I'm just going to go for a Munster win on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yep, let's hope you're wrong.
Let's hope so. That's pretty much it for this week, Dan. Nice. Well, interested just having the two. It's been a long old time since we've just done one mano a mano.
It has. It's been a bit emotional.
It has. Yeah. any particularly fond memories of the last 5 years?
Yeah, I was that we had a great trip on the road, didn't we? Over to Ireland, where we went there on this there and back in the same day to watch. Well, to watch the Scarlets, wasn't it? Against Leinster in the... Was it the semi?
It was the semi-finals, yeah.
In the semi-final, yeah. Yeah, a lot of... We had some good fun, didn't we? On the game, obviously, was... Didn't quite go to plan, but we had some good fun, uh-huh. Didn't we, on the way there and the way back. And the car park on the way back, it still tickles me. We were absolutely shattered, weren't we? And I think you were.
Well, we got off the bus one stop too early at Stansted car park, didn't we? So we were wandering.
I think
around.
I made us do that as well, didn't I? This is the stop. This is the stop, yeah. Jed.
Yeah, wandering around, guy. It must have been late. Wandering around Stansted
and then having
an hour and a half drive around the M25 to get back home as well was not what was needed at that point in time, was it?
But I remember in the car park, it was pitch black. It's so difficult to find your bloody car there as well, isn't it? And we'd been wandering around for a while, your head had gone, and I just started laughing, and it wasn't the time to laugh, was it? Yeah, you had to be there, didn't you? But yeah, that was a fond memory of mine. Jen, anything for you?
Oh, it's been lots, Dan. Been lots of fun. I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's, I mean, some of those early day ones were just hilarious. Just doing it in the, when we had access to a studio as well, and then, you know, getting. I seem to remember us getting locked out of the office as well. Do you remember? I had the same keys and it wouldn't open it, and I was staggering through a couple of pubs in London to try and find some of my workmates who'd be able to let me back in because my house keys were locked in the office
after they'd had two to three hours on the craft ales of Victoria.
4 to 5 hours, I reckon. But for some reason they stick in the mind as it's been a lot of fun. The one I really enjoyed was when we went down to London Welsh's first home game after they started again in the lower leagues, whatever that was, the eighth tier of English rugby. But that was a really good day, and you know the club was a fun place to be around, and that'd definitely be one. And then I suppose just the ones after the Grand Slam were great fun, and the World Cup was just full of hope. It's always gonna I think it's always gonna be a bit dictated by how your team's getting on. And in the absence of the Dragons being any good for the bulk of that 5 years, it's largely been about how Wales have got on. But lots of good stuff in there as well, mate.
Absolutely, and lots more to come, I'm sure.
Here's to five more then, eh?
Exactly, yeah. The next stop is 10.
Next stop is 10. Well, yeah, big thanks to everyone who's contributed over the last 5 years, who's come on as a guest. A big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades, as always. If you want to get some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Mainly a big thanks to you, Dan, for sticking it out during this time.
Well, thanks for having me on. You do all the editing. I just turn up, put on the white boots and put a few up and unders in.
That's it, isn't it? And yeah, of course, mainly a large thanks to everyone who's listened. Whether you're a late convert or you've been listening that whole time, it's much appreciated. But we will be back to chat to you next week on the first of our next 5 years. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.